Take a trip with us to Nilbog. Just promise not to drink the goo. If you get sucked into the Matrix, we will send a phone for you.
Do you believe in fate?
But every movie has a plot hole, and every hole gets filled somehow. Whiskey, wine, or blue milk. Just don't cut me off right now. We're the Club of Two. We're the Plotaholics, ripping plots apart for you.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Plotaholics Podcast. I'm Shane Wilson, and I'm joined, as always, by the vomit to my sweater. Brian's hand.
Well, I'm glad that I can be the vomit.
I was going to say the future to my present day, but...
Or the future to your rabbit.
I was going to say future to my rabbit, but then that felt a little, like, racially on the nose.
Yeah, that's true. You know what? I guess for you know, not just comedy's sake, but intellectual comedy's sake, I can be accepting enough of being vomit on your sweater.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not?
And I'm now. Don't get me twisted here, right? I'm not arguing that it's better to be vomit than black. I'm saying that on this. July 4th.
Oh my god!
Hear what I'm saying, right?
I'm picking up what you're putting down, and oh my god.
Oh boy.
Wow. Woo! We just took a real, we took a hard, sharp U-turn into the awkwardness of 90s sitcom with that.
Some might even say we took a hard right turn.
Oh, there you go. Hard right indeed.
An alt-right turn, even.
Woo! Dude, we are just hitting everything in the first couple of minutes. We're hitting it all.
You know, I feel like we've been saving too much of the heat for the end of the episode. Let's bring it early, right?
Yeah, hey, why not? What's the point of holding back?
Right.
You know, last game of the year, Brent, don't want to hold anything back now.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton.
Man, we're just hitting on all cylinders today.
Mr. Tan.
Yes, sir.
This week's advertised content is 8 Mile.
Yeah, we got the sound and the music, the moment to own it. Yes. You better never let it go. Ho!
Better known in foreign markets as 16 Kilometer. That's not even true. That math doesn't work. But
yeah, I was about to say, you doubled miles to make 1 kilometer?
Yeah, no. Let me think about what it would actually be. It would be more like 10 kilometers.
Okay, so instead of 8 miles,
we're
10
more
kilometers.
Like 12, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
Let me ask.
I'm sure that people, you can Google it. I'm sure that people in the comments are going to let me know about it.
How many kilometers is 8 miles?
And this is where Google's like, well, Roger Ebert gave 8 miles, 13 kilometers up.
12.87 kilometers.
Well, okay, so
miles.
I got
so
a little
you were close,
close when
you
I
were
really
close.
Thought about it. Yeah.
Yeah, so we could just call it 13K.
13K, yeah.
Yeah.
So 8 mile, or as it's known in European markets, 13 kilometers. starring Eminem.
Yes. He's Marshall Mathers, but in this movie, he's Jimmy B. Brabbit.
He's Brabbit.
Yeah, Brabbit Smith.
Mr. Brabbit. Why don't we just kick things off with one of those real slick tenopsi?
Sure. So, Mr. Brabbit Smith, he wants to be a rapper. He's all about that rap game. But the problem is, he deals with a stunning case of stage fright, as he's also the only white guy within miles and miles of miles of a rap battle. 8 miles of rap battles.
That's where the name comes from. Nowhere else.
Yes, that's exactly it.
He's the only white guy for 8 miles.
Right, exactly. Being then, adding to the complications of his life, he has to move back into a trailer with his mother and his little sister, while trying hard to figure out what life is all about, not just among his friends, not just among his enemies, but what he wants his life to be about. Because that's really what this movie is. This is a movie about a guy who, he's still a kid, really. You know, he's 23 years old in the film.
Yeah.
And he's trying to figure out, he's trying to make that leap from being a kid that, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want this, I want that, to getting it. And he has to grow up. And that's the one thing that 8 Mile is. It's not just, I remember people saying that 8 Mile was, you know, the generation at the time's Purple Rain.
Hmm.
From a musical perspective, maybe, but this is also the film about childhood to adulthood.
Yeah. So, you know, it's about a lot of things. Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And the coming of age bit is a good one.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that gets lost. That gets something that really gets lost in the legacy of this film.
And I think that the legacy of the film is that, that old chestnut that it's rarely about race. It's really about social class, like that old thing, you know?
Yeah, which it's really, really, that's really hard to
It's take. All a little more complicated than any right. of
it's,
that,
it's
right?
Way more, it's way more than what we realize, because...
Because, like, obviously race still plays an important factor in a person's ability to get ahead, which isn't to say that it's impossible
right.
for people of color not to get ahead, and it's also not to say that people that are white don't have their own struggles.
Right. I remember this is an argument that I had with a lot of white friends back in this time period when we first started to hear terms of white privilege. Oh, I'm white. I've never had any privileges and blah, blah, blah. And I remember telling a friend at the time, saying that you got white privilege don't mean that you don't struggle.
Right.
It just means
that you don't struggle with being a person of color on top of everything else.
Right. You're struggling based on the struggles that we have in the world.
Right.
Your color does not make your life more difficult.
Right.
You know, you'll get the argument and you'll hear more goofballs say things like, oh, well, affirmative action keeps me from getting blah, 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 blah. And that's where, you heard this argument made in films like American History X in the scene where they had the flashback of the father talking about black guys would get promoted over white guys because he felt that they weren't as good. We only seen it from his perspective. And I remember hearing it when I worked as a corrections officer. But let's be real. If you want to look up statistics, who has affirmative action helped more than anyone? White women. Mm-hmm. It has. So the whole point in the matter is when we're talking about race versus class, it all has something to do with it. But I think it also boils into poor white people being sort of indoctrinated into shock troopers for this larger sort of, for lack of a better term, conspiracy of the elite. Mm-hmm. It'll be a lot easier for us to do what we do if we give them something to hate and to blame their problems on.
Yeah.
That's just my perspective.
Yeah. There are a lot of really interesting sort of cultural dynamics at play here because you have on one hand. Ride this one out with me for a minute. Because. Okay.
You just rode one out with me, so I'm happy.
There are a lot of levels at play, right? Because first of all, you have Eminem, who is widely regarded as one of the greatest rappers to ever rap, right?
He is definitely on my rapper Mount Rushmore.
Absolutely. And I think that he's on most people's rapper Mount Rushmore if they're honest, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
he's remarkable, you know?
He really is. He does, in a day and age where rap started to devolve into just foolishness.
He was one of the only people of substance for a little while, and then thankfully he was able to inspire some more people to get in that vein.
Right, because he got back to the storytelling.
Right.
Granted, they were in his very first album. It was silly stories that were problematic. Yes.
Well, and a lot of the really problematic Eminem stuff, I think, comes from that that rap battle culture of just slams and insults, and it just doesn't play on a record in the same way that it plays in a club.
Right. Well, not to mention the fact that, you know, he's dealing with, you know, ex-wife, baby mama drama, blah blah blah, and stuff with his mother, which is all very, very well documented. This isn't the show for that. If you look for that.
Well, and that's sort of what that was my next stop on my train is, like, you have Eminem, who's very talented, and then you have Eminem or Marshall Mathers that lived this very, like, troubling life. Yes. And then you have this film, which is not strictly autobiographical, but borrows very heavily from his real life.
Right.
And then you have the cultural texture of this story being about a white man who is, you know, he's called Elvis in this, who is trying to get into what is largely considered like a black art form or a black music genre. And he does become the best in this, at least in this community. And so that's complicated because, yeah, like, so it, like, it's interesting because the film is largely about a white man who does have the privileges that are born onto that, right? That infiltrates this particular genre. At the same time, it's about why can't anybody that is the best at something be the best at that thing? Like, why does it have to break down along these lines? And so it is, it's a film that doesn't necessarily come down on either side of that argument in any sort of strict way, right?
It just sort of comes down as it is what it is. Just like,
he won this fight. Like, that doesn't mean he's the best or the second coming or anything like that.
It's just that means that at this point in time, he's the best battle in this area. Yeah. And it's even been like that in his career.
Yeah.
It's never been, the only people that really bring out and bring focus on the fact that he's a white rapper is everybody else.
It's everybody that shoots at him, right? Like the people that take their shots at him and their, like, freestyle, like their slam tracks or whatever.
Or even in the early days when he would be interviewed by radio show hosts, he even brings that up in one of his songs, The Way I Am, which is probably my favorite song by his.
It's a good one.
Is, you know, these people bring all this stuff up, you know, his whiteness, where you grew up in, why are you this, why are you that, blah, blah, blah. And he's never been about that. He's just a rap. He's only been a rapper.
Yeah.
And those that are really about the craft, they see him as a rapper. That's it. We're not going into any of that other stuff. And I think that this film, we get the same thing, because people on the outside that aren't his mom and his friends, they see him as the white guy.
Right.
And he really, but at his job, is the only other place where he's just seen as Jim Smith.
Right.
That's it. They don't care. Like, his boss, Oha from Coming to America.
Yeah.
Number one, every time he's on screen, I'm expecting to hear, "Queen to me." But he doesn't do all that.
No.
But he doesn't care that he raps.
Right.
It's just, look, this is a job that needs to be done. And if you expect to get shifts and hours, you need to show me something. I'm not putting my neck on the line. Because you look at Detroit, and you want to talk about a city that is just a freaking travesty tale.
God.
A city that was thriving 50, 60 years ago. And then, bam, it hits an economic downturn, and it just hasn't changed. You want to talk? I mean, God. They make movies about Detroit as the first of a dystopian society. Well,
and there, not to mention, you know, all of the sort of, like, white flight stuff that you can get into.
Right.
I mean, like, the 8 Mile thing is an almost literal demarcation between the black Detroit and the white suburbs.
Right. But it's still, but, you know, he's still, you know, he's living in the trailer park. Mm-hmm. And the one of the main conflicts in the film is that his mom, who's played by Kim Basinger, who's, wow.
Yeah.
Is dating a dude that went to his high school. Yeah. Like, he was a couple years ahead of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But is dating him.
Yo, the mom stuff in this movie is kind of wild.
It really is, man. I'll tell you what, man. Kim Basinger, for someone who... Now, I remember when she first really rose to stardom in the early, mid-90s.
Like L.A. Confidential?
Yeah, L.A. Confidential. And then you even see how she's playing up on her success in Wayne's World 2.
Right.
And what was the movie that she did with Alec Baldwin when they were... I can't remember the name of it. I have to look at her filmography, but yeah. I know that Michael Marsden was in it as well. And of course, you even look at her time with, you know, she really rose to major league prominence with 9 1/2 weeks, as I'm looking at it now, Cool World, Batman. Yeah. I mean, she was huge. And then it lets you know how amazing of an actress she is, that she can sort of move away from what's looked at as high profile,
right,
and do something gritty. Like, as lauded as Meryl Streep is, I don't see Meryl Streep playing a woman living in a trailer.
Hmm.
I ain't seen it. Maybe I'm wrong. And yeah, I kind of hope I am. I hope I am. But no, I mean, but the thing is, though, but she is so. She is like the quiet MVP.
She is, absolutely. Yeah, film. I agree with that.
She is the quiet MVP because she is really, really... She brings this likability. She's not like a typical... Her character isn't typical of what you see in this genre. Some drugged out POS that is just useless.
Well, they're all.
I mean, she has her problems.
Everybody in the film is, everyone in Brabbit's circle is just trying to do the best they can, right?
Right. And I mean, she's not. She's with a shitty dude, right?
Like
she's with a shitty dude. She drinks a lot because she's just trying to get the getaway. Is the Alec Baldwin movie that I was talking about?
Gotcha.
I mean, she does drink, obviously, but she's doing all that she can to make a life. But she also holds on to hope. She goes to bingo for that hope. That's her hope.
That's it. Like her life is like a really predictable pattern of escape and hope.
Right.
You drink to escape. You go to bingo to hope. You do anything you can to ignore what's right in front of you.
Right.
Because it's a pretty depressing existence. She's obviously also still, like, she's on the verge of getting evicted almost the entire film.
Right.
And that is, I mean, that's a really terrifying moment to be in, right? Like, to be on the verge of that sort of personal collapse, because it's the only thing that sort of separates you from complete, like, self-destruction, right?
Yeah, complete destitution and self-destruction is having four walls.
Yeah.
I mean, but honestly, I'm going to go off on a Megent for a second.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, you see what I did there. Have you ever seen like a homeless person or a drifter and just wonder about the freedom that they must have?
Ooh, like okay.
the worries that they don't have that you have?
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Well, because I mean, like, it is not a myth that there are people that choose that lifestyle. Like, it's, you know, there are plenty of people who have that forced upon them because of, like, you know,
circumstance.
But then there are also plenty of people that choose to live that life.
Yeah, I mean, I would be lying if I didn't say there were a few times that I seriously thought about just packing a bag and just walking.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty sure that I could do, I was talented enough at certain things, whether it be, you know, going to a bar, hey, do you need a bouncer, blah, blah, blah,
right,
you know, blah, blah, blah. Or, hey, can I wash some dishes for a meal, a couple of bucks, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And just go across country. Like, honestly, I like to think that if I came from money, like, you know, if, you know, like, let's just say, like, now granted, when I say came from money, it's not like my family, my mother was destitute. My mother had a government job. But, you know, both my parents were together and maybe one of my parents was a business owner. So I had some money to come back to fall back on. I probably would have taken a gap year between school and just, you know, drifted the U.S.
Just kicked it.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think that if you are a single person, that is infinitely more possible.
Yeah. When you're young and single. When you're young and single and have no kids.
She has like, and Brabbit's not even her only kid.
No, she has a little baby, like who's like 6-7 years old.
So the idea of drifting for her is like you, she needs this steadiness of this home for her daughter.
Right. Even the boyfriend is a way for her to escape and have some sort of steadiness. He's not a good person, and she'll even say,
and he won't go down on her. So
right. I seriously cannot imagine talking to my son if you know,
right? Like
something.
That's the
I cannot
thing.
Imagine.
I feel like their relationship was like wildly weird, but at the same time, living in such close confined spaces, like
it's different.
It's gonna get weird, right? Like,
yeah, you don't have space to have your own little world. Your world is constantly merged into someone else's world.
Yeah,
like there is no be quiet. My kid's asleep. That kid is gonna hear you no matter how.
No matter what's
you
up. Yeah.
So and even but he's like, you know, he won't go down. Oh my God, Mom.
Like, who is in your estimation, Brian?
Yes,
this is a game that we like to play sometimes.
It's a great game.
It's the game that I call the worst person in Westeros.
Yes,
where you know based obviously on Game of Thrones and how every week there was a different terrible person that sort of like took that title.
Yeah,
it's an idea that I got from Slate.com column, but. In your estimation, who in 8 Mile is the worst person in Westeros?
I think that guy Wink is. He's a piece of crap, man.
Wink definitely
Wink
wins
garbage.
It for me. Yeah.
Wink is absolute garbage. He is, and it's not even Papa Doc and his guys.
No, because they're just a bunch of like.
Well, Papa Doc's a freaking he's a poser.
Yeah, that's it.
And these other guys, they're cronies. You know, that Papa Doc is Malfoy and his guys are Crabbe and Goyle.
Yep.
You know, that's about it. But Wink he's supposed to be his best friend. He's supposed to be one of his best friends.
Yeah, he's the one that's going to bat for him. He's trying to help him out.
But he's also working both sides constantly with everybody in every which way. And none of their inner circle likes Wink.
Yeah.
You know, and he just looks really, really, really just shady because he's just a shady ass dude. He's a garbage can.
So Brabbit falls in love with so first of all, the film starts off and Brabbit is breaking up with
Janine.
With Kim and Janine. And so, yeah. And we only meet Janine once, right?
Yeah. We hear about her, but we end up seeing her when she comes to his job. And of course,
right.
Taryn Manning, who is doing her absolutely amazing Pensatucky impression. Oh, wait, she is Pensatucky. Like, is there anyone else in Hollywood that we know of to date that has gotten famous from playing almost exactly the same character?
I mean, I feel like almost everybody that's gotten famous has gotten famous from playing almost the exact same character.
I mean, there's a few
They might
exceptions.
Eventually do other things, right? But
yeah,
like
but
Jim
I mean,
Carrey, even though Jim Carrey has started to do a lot of different things, he got famous for playing the exact same guy over and over again.
Right, but I mean, but in a lot of her roles, she's the same person. She is really the same person, except for maybe two things. Like, her role as Cherry in Sons of Anarchy, she's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, and I'm not coming down on her. Look, man, you do what you can to make it work.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, she's made a career of playing the white trash girl, the loud, trashy white trash girl.
Yeah.
That's what she's made her career on.
She's good at it, you know.
She is very, very good. Oh, Sharon's coming in with the tea, with the Bon Jovi tie dye. Oh, my coffee. Sorry. Thank you, my dear.
Nice.
And what I really like is that she's ordered this new coffee that It's grown from mushrooms. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a mushroom type coffee. So it doesn't. It's not made with all the crap chemicals and everything. And it doesn't mold because it's already got mushrooms in it. Because
it's already mold.
Yeah, it's already there. Living on a prayer. I drink my mushroom coffee.
But yeah, so we do meet Janine, but then he falls in love with this woman, Alex,
played by the late, great, and amazing,
so good,
Brittany Murphy.
I forget how much I like her.
I miss her so much.
She's so great. Wasn't she the voice of Luann?
Yes, she was the voice of Luann in King of the Hill. I mean, Brittany Murphy, now she came on the scene in like, she came on the scene in 93, but she got really famous in 95. She just took off from there.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It feels like we got her for such a short amount of time.
Well, we did.
Yeah, because we only got her for like, what, 16 years?
Yeah, like you mean like in the scene?
Yeah, because
you like figure... It's like 18 years. So this is years active, 91 to 2009. But you're saying like she really broke out in 93.
Yeah, 93, 95 is when she really broke on.
Yeah, and so like that's about 16 years worth of work. And I think so great. It feels so short. Many things.
It feels so short. She's one of those actresses that she's one of those famous people that died that we say died too soon.
Yeah.
That if she were still around, I think the industry would be a lot different. Like, all right, if Cobain doesn't die, the music industry is a lot different than what it is now. I would like to think. Because you figure, you look at the amount of people that Cobain has inspired in the sort of anti-establishment rock.
Right.
If he were still alive today, he would probably have been able to influence way more people.
I feel like if he were around today, he would have influenced fewer. Because I think that it's his death that made him such,
fair enough,
like a stark sort of figure. You know what I mean?
Well, do you think Brittany Murphy, if she was still alive today, would have made there would be some major changes? Because now that's another heavy hitting female actress that is completely and utterly respected that is calling the shots. You think that she's sort of changing how women are looked at in film? And
I think she's definitely in that conversation. Right. With those folks. And I think that they would be those voices would be amplified because of her presence among them. You know,
no, I agree. I think that's just something that I like to do when I think about these people that are gone that we see.
I think that when you think about her as an actress, the great tragedy is that we were robbed of her being in so many things.
Right.
We were robbed of like, you know, latter day Brittany Murphy roles where she's in the game for long enough that she's taking up the Kim Basinger place. Right. Eventually, you know, like we're missing that, like the elder stateswoman of acting. Right.
Yeah. Like what film that's out today do you think would be different if Brittany Murphy was in like within the last. Let me see what she died in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So of the last eight years.
Hmm.
Well, no, wait, no, her, no, 2009 she died. Died in 2009. So she's been gone now 13 years. So of the last 10, like, honestly, I really think we might get her in a role in the MCU.
I was going to say, what are the odds that she's Black Widow?
She's either Black Widow or she is... Maybe we get... What if we get Jennifer Walters on screen a lot sooner? We get She-Hulk a lot sooner.
Could be good.
Or we get another female, maybe we get another female superheroine. Like, I could see her maybe even being like more
Spider-Gwen.
Spider-Gwen. No, I mean someone like Moira McTaggart in the X-Men series.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe older Jean Grey.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe or a rebooted Jean Grey.
Oh, what? How would you feel about her as? Oh man, give me a minute. I'm working on something.
Okay.
As Hela from Ragnarok.
Hela. Yeah, I can see her as Hela.
She could be good there. I mean, it's hard. It's a hard game to play because there have been so many movies released since then.
Right. But I'm
looking at like things like. Would I have loved a version of Knives Out that featured Brittany Murphy?
Yes,
certainly.
I would love a Mission Impossible movie with Brittany Murphy in it.
Yeah, would I have liked a Brittany Murphy in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or any of these Quentin Tarantino flicks?
Right.
Sure. I mean, like, she belongs in any of this stuff. She's talented enough to be in anything, you know.
She's still among the best actresses I think that have come along in a lot.
She's great, and she's great in this movie. She's so flawless,
and she's not in the movie as much as you would think, with her being among the top bills.
Well, and what I was gonna, we've talked about this with other performers. We talked about this with John Cusack.
Yeah,
how you never feel like there are moments in this movie where it feels like Eminem is acting, because Eminem's not an actor, right? He's a musician.
Yeah. He's, in a lot of ways, this movie is perfect for him because he's essentially playing himself.
He's playing himself. But there are times when it feels like he's acting. Yeah. But mostly he's good. But Brittany Murphy never feels like she's acting. She feels like she's Alex.
Yeah. Every movie that she's in that it's I've like seen that. Her in, yeah. It's like that.
Absolutely.
Kim Basinger, too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think what makes this movie great is so you get Eminem, who's at the center of this, and they're basically saying, telling him, look, Em, this is basically your story. We've adjusted this so it's more your story. Just be yourself.
Yeah.
And there's spots where he's acting, but you have a Kim Basinger, Michael Shannon, Brittany Murphy, Mekhi Phifer around him so that the shortcomings that come are hidden. It's kind of like what Paul Heyman used to do in the old ECW. Accentuate your positives so you can hide the negatives.
Yeah, no, he's still very good. Don't get me wrong.
He's amazing.
Right?
He's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, Evan Jones, who plays Cheddar Bob, who's probably the most hilarious and most annoying character in this film.
Right.
Even his presence helps to make Eminem better.
Yeah.
And that isn't that what you want from your supporting characters, is to make your leads better. A great supporting cast will take a novice actor or a non-actor and make them way better. Why do you think this is his only real movie?
Yeah, I mean, he knows his lane, right? And his lane is music.
Right.
And of course, you know, he won an Oscar for this, but not for acting, right? He won for Best Original Song.
Yep, and it was a well-deserved Oscar.
I mean, that song will forever be a banger.
Forever. That song is on so many damn workout lists.
I was about to say, yeah.
And whatever.
Played in stadiums, he wrote an anthem.
If I were a professional athlete, or like whether it be football, baseball, basketball.
Right, this is your walkout music?
This is my walkout music. Matter of fact, if I'm a wrestler, I'm adding this to something that I might come out to. Yeah, I said Swamped by Ludacuna Coil the last time we talked about this, but it will probably be this, Lose Yourself.
Yeah. No, it's Lose Yourself.
It's an anthem.
Great.
It's
and
an
honestly,
anthem.
Like when he is, there's this montage sort of in the middle of the film when he's writing this song. Mm. And I love the way that was done in the film because it's a different version and it erases parts of the lyrics to mimic the writing process. And I thought that was really a really cool effect.
And I really love as we both are, we're both writers. We both write.
Allegedly.
We both written, we were novelists and we're songwriters. When we watch B-Rabbit writing,
yeah,
Don't you? It was a
really good reimagine, or not reimagining, but like.
But I mean, you're good, getting them. It's a great representation.
It was accurate, is I guess what I'm trying to say. Yeah,
I remember coming up with ideas on the bus, getting that notebook out, and just scribbling and scrawling and trying to.
There's like, no real, like, very real way to like realistically depict the writing process really in a visually compelling way. No. But this gets really close.
Very close, because I'll tell you, man, writing is hard.
It is hard.
It is not easy when you're, especially when you're writing lyrics, man, that inspiration comes out of nowhere that you're trying to hurry up and write something. That's why, yeah, I've had plenty of times where I've had song ideas written on napkins.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
This is way off topic. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's really not way off topic. It's like pretty much on topic. It's just not about what we're talking about right now. Yeah. So you book your talent for a radio show interview.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Then you decide that during the time that man is going to show up to the radio station for the interview that you helped him book, you decide to bang his girlfriend in the studio?
Yeah. Wink is Wink is like the biggest piece of shit this side of the toilet bowl.
Yeah.
I can't, like, every but, time. I mean,
like, does it make sense what I'm saying? Like if you're going to bang her, like, that feels like the worst place and time.
That is the absolute worst place and time.
Why is she like even there? Like, she's not a musician. Like, why did you bang her in the place that, it's not like they work together, right?
And
like,
you're shocked that, well, he's supposed to be working with her, too, making moves for her,
I know
her
that
too.
He works with her, but she's not in music, so why is she at the radio station?
Right. It's almost like he wanted to be caught.
Right, and I think he did.
I think he's sort of, I think all throughout the movie, though, it's almost like he is screaming at B-Rabbit, hey, I'm not your friend.
Right, because
I'm not really your friend.
Because he, like, it like, publicly is, like, also promoting the other
free
group.
The free world.
Yeah, the free world.
How is that a name for your rap crew?
You're like posse?
World. Yeah, how do you call yourselves the free world?
Oh man, I mean, usually just with their mouths, I think, but
that's a horrible nickname.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good.
It ain't great, but I mean, hey, man, shout out to Sam Wilson for, making it work, man. Sam Wilson, he had some flows, though. I'll give him that, man. I'll give Sam Papa Doc Wilson some, Clarence Sam Wilson.
Yeah,
Papa
his
Doc.
Name is Clarence.
I mean, I can't make fun of the name Clarence because that was my grandfather's name.
Yeah.
But how are you a badass MC named Clarence?
Have you ever heard this? Do you know the Flight of the Conchords, the band?
The name is familiar to me.
So they're like a comedian band, right? Okay. And so they did a hip-hop song. They're a New Zealand folk duo.
Okay.
But they decided that because the kids are into hip-hop, that they would do like a rap song.
Okay.
And so the rap song is called the Hip Hopopotamus versus the rhinoceros.
what is happening?
And it is so good, but there's this one part where he like asks, hold on, can I just play it?
I would be disappointed if you didn't.
It is too good.
After that setup, if you don't play it, I'm gonna be very upset.
The rhinoceros. It's so good.
Heap Hop Anonymous.
Right. Let me see. We'll do this. All right. I need to do this. I need to do, right, exactly. We'll pull
you
that
need
over.
Do the
here.
Bang, bang. Give it up for my thing. Dum,
de, we'll
dum.
Lose that. We'll do this. And then we'll. And then we'll do this, and then we'll do that, and then we'll be there.
Right? Yay!
Yeah, okay. So here's a little hip-hopopotamus versus the rhinoceros.
And our next song is going to...
There should be more things for the rabidactyl.
Crossovers. Now, this is...
Chris, you hear that okay?
And I'm Jamaican, yeah. But we're also known as in the... I mean, back in New Zealand, where we invented rap.
Yeah.
known as the rhinoceros.
Yeah.
And I'm aka'd as the hip hop hippopotamus. And this is just a gangster rap battle between us.
the hippopotamus versus the rhinoceros, featuring the hippopotamus and the rhinoceros.
Yeah. Yeah.
They call me the rhinoceros, not because I'm fat, not because I got birds on my back, but because I'm horny. I'm horny. When I'm on the mic, I'm a global warming. You can't ignore me. In the bedroom, I'm the gentleman. The ladies come before me. Check your yellow pages. I'm a registered rhinocologist now. I'm passing over the mic to the hippopotamus.
Yeah, they call me the hippopotamus. My lyrics are bottomless.
Sometimes my rhymes are polite, like thank you Mrs. Johnson for dinner, that was delicious, good night. And other times they're obscene, like a pornographic R18 dream about bitches smothered in margarine.
I like how he just dropped off.
Right?
They call me the hippopotamus. I got flows that glow like phosphorus popping off the top of this esophagus. I'm not a water-dwelling mammal from Africa that's moved to the metropolis and be taught how to break dance. Where did you get that preposterous hypothesis? Did Steve tell you that?
Did Steve tell
What's
you
What's he got to do with it? What kind of rapping name is Steve? Steve.
Steve.
Rappers diss me. Say my rhymes are sissy.
What?
Be more constructive with your feedback.
Why? Because I rap about reality. Like me and my grandma having a cup of tea. There ain't no party like Banana's Tea Party. Freestyle, hip hop, hippopotamus. Freestyle, hip hop, hippopotamus style.
I'm freestyling, just saying what comes into the top of my head, like it's just random. Ooh. There's a picture of New York. There's a picture of New York. There's a big fat raven picture of New York. I'm just free. New York. Freestyling. There's a picture of New York. Freestyling. Sometimes when I freestyle, I lose confidence. My rhymes are so potent that in the small segment, I made all of the ladies in the first two rows pregnant.
Ew.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes my lyrics are sexist, but you lovely bitches and hoes should know I'm trying to correct this.
When I say ooh,
oh, yeah, like
that is funny. That like, is cool.
It is. It's so funny because, and it's like because I think the thing that makes me laugh the most about it is that it alternates between them being completely terrible at it and then also sometimes kind of good at it.
Right, and I think it's the the big part of it is the fact that it's so inconsistent, and it's the right randomness that makes it so great.
And it's like the self-deprecation when he's like, sometimes when I freestyle, I lose confidence.
My rhymes are bottomless.
Right, and then nothing. Like that's
and then
the
just
best.
Nothing. There's like no follow-up to right? it.
This is the best. Those two dudes are so funny, man.
You know what's bad is that actually is like what it is when I try to freestyle rap.
I know. Like you get like two good lines, and then you're done. Yeah.
It's like, you know what? Can I just do
passing
someone
off
else's?
The mic. Passing yeah. off the mic.
Yeah. Because then I'll say, I'll rip you in two. I'll splay you around like you're Sushi Lou. Yeah. Yeah, I would get so mad when I was a kid and we'd do our little flow circle.
Yeah.
And I was terrible at it. Like
you're like Jermaine when he's like, there's a picture of New York. A picture of New York,
yeah. And look at that. A picture of New York.
Right. It's like, have you guys seen our elementary school? It's our elementary school. But yeah, like I can.
Chocolate milk. It's chocolate milk day. It's chocolate milk day. Again.
I've gotten pretty good at improvising songs on acoustic guitar, but that's because I can control the rhythm of it, right? And I can sort of get to it when I get to it. But like
I
when
can't
somebody
even compose my own song, yet.
Like in a hip hop freestyle situation, like where someone else dictates the beat and everything.
Yeah,
like awesome. that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, like if you seriously came out and just started playing chords on an acoustic, I'd probably just go. I'd be like, all right, I think this is an E, so I'm just gonna play on the E string. In varying speeds.
Oh yeah, I mean, like no, I can't really. I can't improvise like with a band, right? I mean, like improvising song lyrics,
right? Like you remember in La Bamba when mm-hmm. he starts playing "Gonna Rock It Up," and he just starts playing, and then like the drummer's like,
right,
and everyone just starts playing. I'm like, yeah, Brian would just be like,
right,
all right, can we like script this? And then I'll come in. It's like Eddie Murphy talking about, hey, man, I can't fight, but you put me in a movie where I'm the star, I'm going to kick your ass.
Right.
That's me.
But yeah, like I'm with you. Like, so Wink is just kind of a piece of shit.
He's just a garbage can. He's that, you know what he is? Wink is that garbage can that you see the garbage men and it's like, they know they need to empty the trash, but they don't even want to touch it.
Yeah. They just set it on fire.
Yeah, the garbage can is more disgusting than the trash that's inside of it. That is Wink.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Like, he Wink is that sneaky-ass guy that you went to school with that acted like he was friends with everybody, but all he was doing was playing sides against each other.
What do you think was going on there? Do you think Alex liked him? Do you think that he used his influence over her to get that to make that happen? Because
I think Alex was kind of using him. Alex saw him as someone that could get her what she wanted.
And she was using her sex to manipulate him.
Correct. And well, I mean, look, and
what do you think about her relationship with Brabbit then? Is it similar, like, just like a matter of convenience or?
I think it was one part matter of convenience, one part he interests her.
Well, he's smitten with her, right?
He's into her. She likes him, but she sees
everything here as temporary, right? Because she's on her way out.
Right. So she doesn't really care. I think that he's the type of guy that she would see herself being interested in and probably falling for and then knew that she would be miserable.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that Alex also represents that where people are in our lives for only a season,
right?
And they have a reason for that influence. She really helped him to. She helped to spur him. She was his muse.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, if anything, you can look at her as the guardian angel that helps push him toward his path. Granted, the guardian angel that has sex with you,
and also your friend,
and your not friend.
Well, yeah, there you go.
But yeah, Alex isn't a good person. She's not a bad person. She's just a person. Just like most everyone in this film, they're just people.
They're just people. Yeah, that's the thing.
Except for Wink. Wink is the garbage can.
Yeah. Now, we talked last week about how the people the people in Once were mostly good people.
Yeah, they were good people just with their own situations.
Right. They were not like trying to coerce anyone into anything or manipulate anybody. They were just trying to make something beautiful. Here, right. You have a lot of people that are, I think, more realistically portrayed because it's not that any of them are outright evil. They're just like, some of them are just kind of shitty.
Right. And that's exactly what it is with these people. They're just like, Wink is a shitty person.
He's an opportunist, right?
He's an opportunistic person that manipulates people using his friendships to get what he wants. Papa Doc is a guy who... He sees this sort of thug. He's someone that I think is fighting with his identity because he's going to he's in these private school settings and he doesn't want to be seen as the token black guy. So what is he doing? He's trying to make this hip hop persona.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so charismatic that he has people that are also talented following him.
Yeah.
And they run a foul Rabbit just because, look, you're not always going to get along with people that you share things in common, because isn't Rabbit having an identity crisis as well?
Oh, for sure. And he's trying to find his own space in this place where he does not feel welcome.
He doesn't feel like he only feels like, and it's not even just like a black thing or a white thing, because his best friends are three black guys and a white guy.
Yeah.
And
Future, who is his best friend,
yeah, like Future, really who he's closest
him,
to,
right?
Yeah, Future loves him to death as yeah. a brother, and Future is trying really, really, really hard to make him be more, help him to become more than what he is.
Yeah.
So I think with Rabbit, though, the racial aspect is forced on him.
Yeah.
Where all of them, with the exception of Papa Doc, has the class thing as this overarching thing on them.
Right.
Everyone in this film is dirt ass poor,
I would
except
also
for
say,
Papa Doc.
I would say that Papa Doc also has the class thing on him.
Right.
And he goes to great lengths to hide it because it wouldn't disqualify him, but it would discredit him.
Yeah, because no one would be able to, like, you don't see things from my perspective.
Right.
Like, yeah, how are you one of me when you're rich?
Yeah.
You're not worried about it. Now, yeah. But I think, though, that where Rabbit doesn't feel welcome is the fact that the one thing that he's good at, he's told you can't do because you're an outsider.
Yeah.
But now it makes you ask the question, well, then who is more well-versed to do it, Papa Doc or Rabbit? Papa Doc is poor. Well, I'm sorry, Rabbit is poor, Papa Doc is rich. So you're not going to accept talent from one because he's white, but you'll accept talent from another that's hiding from you what he is.
Right. I think that, like, so much
and
of it...
And you're going to give him a chance to respond. Even right. when the truth about him comes out.
Yeah. I think that that at the root of the film is a debate about what hip hop is like, how important to genuine, honest, sincere hip hop, how important is it that the creator be black and come from that experience? How important is it that the creator be poor and come from that experience? Like, right. how, like, is hip hop the music of the streets? Is it, or does it belong to everybody? Right. Like,
I think speaking as a black man, I think the thing is that when you look at rock, and this was something that was a part of the black culture, the black experience, and then it was stolen from us. I mean, in a film that we're going to watch in a couple of weeks, Dreamgirls, we see that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a street cred thing, because I think that once Eminem in real life and once Brabbit here demonstrates his legitimacy, that community welcomes him in. The problem,
because he can do it. They realize he's right. not just faking. He really is.
The and problem is when somebody like Ed Sheeran straps a guitar across his chest and starts rapping.
Right. That's the problem. And that's
or Macklemore, right?
Right. Well, yeah, because, I mean, when you really look at, like, let's go with something that's very, very topical right now. I refuse to watch the Elvis Presley movie.
Right.
I feel that Elvis Presley, now people can sit here and say, oh, Elvis gave all kinds of credit to the black gospel singers and blah, 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 blah. Maybe in later years, but at the time, he definitely took advantage.
Yeah.
And black artists that made these songs what they were, and he stole the voice. I mean, we even talked about that in A Star Is Born.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing someone's voice to tell something.
Yeah.
That hurts. And when you come from a people that it's almost like you're not allowed, you're discouraged to innovate. You're discouraged for doing anything. But at the same token, it's almost like you're being forced to seek the acceptance of the your oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
To see your music then appropriated by said oppressor, and you're completely and utterly eliminated from it. I mean, you even look at it now. You look at the growing cannabis industry. How many people of color and poor people? Like, I just saw a news report today that there's a black guy that is literally facing, he's got a lifetime imprisonment for marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And the legal system, like the judges, refuse to overturn that conviction.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. But now that cannabis is becoming this multi-billion dollar industry, how many people of color and black people specifically are you seeing as CEOs of some of these companies?
Right.
Very few. So that's the reason why at the time Eminem wasn't really appreciated. In this film, we see Rabbit is not being respected mm-hmm. because here comes another one taking what should not just so much be rightly ours, but it's like, here you come. You're not going to share this. You're just going to take.
Right.
But the one thing that Eminem has done his entire career Absolutely. Is that he has become a part of the genre.
And he has elevated other black voices.
Right.
Using his platform.
Right. Where Elvis took.
Yeah.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Like Elvis took. Never had collaborations with any of the guys that he took this music no, from.
Nor did Jerry Lee Lewis. Now, granted, nobody wanted anything to do with Jerry Lee Lewis. Meanwhile, Jerry Lee Lewis did the exact same thing that
but
Elvis
think about
did.
What
the only
Elvis,
difference is that was his cousin.
Think about what Elvis could have done.
Right.
Like as big as right. that dude was.
Right. He could have done
in
so
the
much.
South, especially in the South.
Absolutely. Elvis could have led the charge to
because that dude, for a while, that dude was untouchable.
Right. He could have seriously put the death knells in the Confederacy.
Right.
But he didn't.
He was a coward.
He was. Eminem, what has Eminem done? Eminem has actually done so much hard work in making hip hop for everyone.
And
so,
one of the, I think, essential, like foundational aspects of hip hop music is roots, not forgetting where you're from. And Eminem
right.
has never forgotten Detroit.
Not at all. Kid Rock, on the other hand, you want to talk about a guy who tried to take and take and take and take and take.
Right.
Look at Kid Rock. I mean, God, even the Insane Clown Posse, for all the stuff that, now I'm not a fan of Insane Clown Posse at right. all. Never have been. But they at least have way more cred in the Detroit music scene.
Yeah.
Than Kid Rock ever will.
Yeah.
Kid Rock has basically become a Ted Nugent.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
He really is.
All right, so let's talk about the final boss battle.
Oh, my God. This is, you want to talk about, this is my favorite aspect. Like, I love the fact that M battles with Exhibit. Now, granted, do I think that M could crush Exhibit in a rap battle? Sure.
Yeah.
But at this point in the film, because we saw M choke earlier on in the film.
Right.
And now here he is again. And I mean, these rap battles were some of the best rap battles that I've ever seen. And I've actually, I'm not talking lately or within the last 15 years, but when I was a kid and we would be all around in our little rap battle circles, I would hear some flows going and they were pretty decent.
Yeah.
But these rap battles here were so great. Like, once the show's over, I'm going to be doing a water change for my tank. I'm going to play all the rap battles.
They are good. But the genius of the final battle of Brabbit taking and Brabbit taking all the ammo that Papa Doc has and essentially slamming himself before turning around and like slamming Papa Doc.
Right. But the thing is, though, he's not even slamming himself. This isn't the self-deprecating
humor. Right, that's true.
This is all you're going to say.
Here's all the shit you got.
Right, but here's the thing. I'm still standing here.
Right,
no matter
none of that
what
shit
you've
bothers
done.
Me.
Right,
Why
I know
are you
that,
lying to these people about who you are?
Right, I know that I live in a trailer. Right. I know I live with my mom. Yeah, this guy screwed this girl that I was into. And y'all jumped me. Look, but I'm still here.
The best part of that, like the thing that made me laugh a little bit, is when he said Future's an Uncle Tom, and we look at Future and he goes,
yeah. You want to talk about a nod back to The Wedding Singer, where he was like, the fat guy's gonna have a heart attack if we don't eat cakes. And he's like,
right. Right, yeah, because Future legit like looked pissed, and then he was like, nah, he's right.
But the thing is, though, is that there. But the thing is, and the beauty of it, because I remember having this conversation with someone, they're like, why the hell would he call his friend an Uncle Tom? Blah, blah, blah. Future isn't an Uncle Tom.
Right.
They're referring to him as an Uncle Tom because he knows the game.
Right.
And he knows how to work.
And he knows how to play the game. Right.
And he knows how to play the game. He doesn't have to act and move and talk and walk in this way. And
right.
He doesn't. So he's saying, yeah, sure, he's an Uncle Tom from your perspective.
Right.
And that's why Future is pissed at first, but then he sort of like
because he like takes a second to register exactly what he said, right?
Right.
And because, and how he meant it.
Right. Because the thing is, for people that aren't black, and here's the thing. Unless you are black, and it don't matter how much you hang out with a black person, it don't matter. You can be born and raised with black people. And I'm talking adopted by the black family legally. You've lived there all your life. I'm sorry, but until you have been in the skin of a black person and are called an Uncle Tom, you will never understand what that feels
right.
like. You will never get it. If you want an understanding, watch the episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when Will and Carlton are rushing the fraternity.
Mm.
That will help you understand.
Yeah.
Because you can... You can say you get it, and on one end, you can get it as much as you can from an outsider's perspective. Like, all right, I may be part Native American, but I was never raised within Native American culture.
Right.
I am an outsider. I can say that I can get it, but I haven't lived it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference between, okay, I get it. I think I understand that. Oh, I know all about it. And yeah. I'm so excited. I'm so passionate about it that I'm knocking my headphones off.
Yeah, man. Like, calm down.
Yeah, no. But so when, but see, I think that Rabbit understands as best as one can without being black.
Yeah.
That's why he brought it up to really, because really what Rabbit did in that whole battle. He not only delegitimized the free world,
mm-hmm.
he obliterated them. This was the Rock v. Billy Gunn in the Attitude Era. When Billy Gunn, for those that are wrestling fans, you know, but those that don't know, Billy Gunn had the opportunity to become a main event star. And the Rock completely obliterated his push with one promo. One promo. And he forever regulated Billy Gunn to mid-card tag team wrestler status. And that is what Rabbit did to Papa Doc.
Yeah, because Papa Doc didn't even respond.
He couldn't.
What is he going to say? He just took his entire slam out of his mouth.
Right. Just complete, because all Papa Doc would have been doing is just repeating everything that was already said.
Yep.
And by then... No matter what he said, he could have been Dwayne The Rock Johnson himself on the mic, and he would have gotten booed.
Yeah.
Because, again, it would have been the exact same thing that was already said.
Yeah. Let's see. The movie, 8 Mile, Mr. Tan, was made on a $41 million budget. And it grossed $242.9 million at the box office. It is currently sporting a 75% on the tomato meter with a 54% audience score.
You want to talk about a case where the audience score, I think because a lot of the audience just don't get it.
I think
maybe they don't get it. Maybe they don't get it. Because there's not much bad about this. Like, I don't want to say not much bad. Are there aspects of this movie that are... kind of.
So there are things that I can quibble with. It's tough because
give me a couple.
So this is sort of where I've been struggling with it a little bit. And it's really just in the like whole Eminem of it. Like, let's make this thing a biopic. Mm-hmm. And then I get on board with all of it. You know what I mean? Because that's ultimately what it is. We just pretend it's not, right? Like, we change a couple of little details here and there. Like, that's not his daughter. That's like his sister, his right? Like, little
sister.
Things like that, right?
Yeah.
But we've gotten over the history of cinema. We've gotten so many underdog stories where everything just kind of works out against all odds. and, you know, someone who was unable to perform at the beginning of the film is suddenly able to like just come out and like rip these people to shreds in the same exact setting. Like, I would love to see a version of 8 Mile where, like, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a white guy and all of that stuff, right? But like, we need more stories about this thing where it doesn't all work out. Now, given we don't see Eminem, we don't see Brabbit like record the demo, we don't see Brabbit sign a major deal, we don't see Brabbit go on tour, we don't see
he just goes stuff, back right? to work.
Right. That, and that I loved. I loved that he like mopped the floor with this guy and then just goes, went back to the plant. Right. That's great. But
I think that was the perfect ending.
It was the perfect ending because you don't want him to lose the battle. Right. But I also don't care to see him like sign a major deal off
of
that.
He's not. You know? Yeah. Just because you win one rap battle don't mean you're getting this meteoric rise into the music industry.
Right.
You won a local rap battle.
Like, I feel like the wink, like Alex thing is kind of a distraction. I would have much rather watched him like work on the demo, like, because he spent all this time in the middle of the film writing the song that he never actually recorded.
Right.
And that sucks.
But that's also a big part of how it goes. I mean, how many times?
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
This movie is very, very real. It's an extremely, you know, the weirdest thing for me in this is seeing Eminem without bleach blonde hair.
Right, yeah, there's that.
That was among the weirdest parts for me. I mean,
yeah, I think that like it was like there were moments in the film where they got into some like really interesting sort of socio-political stuff, like with the old rundown houses and how the city's not doing anything to like take these places away from criminals.
Yeah, they burned the house down because that's where a child molester.
Right. And that stuff was interesting, and I feel like there wasn't enough of that. I felt like the movie sort of like lived in these like parking lot rap circles for a little longer than maybe it needed to.
Is that really what it's like in Detroit? People what? Just sort of when it's not hanging out. Yeah, when it's not like -80 degrees below zero,
yeah.
And Mark Wahlberg is dumping people into the Lake Michigan after a fight because his mom was killed. They're just hanging out and rapping and like. Yeah, lots.
I think so. Also, I feel like the Brittany Murphy Eminem sex scene was very long.
Yeah, I don't think I would have been like that was a very long drawn out sex scene. I mean,
yeah,
be super crass, but I don't see many people lasting that long with Brittany.
Well, it's not even really that. It's like, I mean, they're banging. Like, I get it. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't need to see it forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Can we have the traditional film of two pumps and done?
Or not, or like two pumps and then cut away to something else to indicate the passage of time.
Right.
Like, and that's fine. And
that was an interesting directorial decision.
Because they lingered on that shit for a hot minute.
Yeah, you mean nobody, like number one, you're at your job. So you mean no one is in this section of your job that
right.
you have time for this?
Car plant in Detroit.
Yeah. In Detroit, yeah. Like, I'm sorry. I've had instances where I was.
Oh, but Brian, it's because they went under that one hand railing.
Oh well, there you go. Hand railings right. hide you from everything.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why we have not been able to find leprechauns, Bigfoot, or Loch Ness monster.
Because of hand railings.
Because of hand railings, exactly.
When they installed hand railings around Lake Loch Ness, you know.
Now Nessie cannot be seen.
That's it, for sure. They're all over Yosemite National Park. Can't see Sasquatch.
Yeah, exactly.
Hand railings.
Hand railings.
Hey, I'm just saying, are you paying attention, America? What are they hiding behind these hand railings?
All right, Alex Rogan. I think the mother-son dynamic of Kim Basinger and Eminem was very, very, it was interesting, but it was also kind of refreshing because we're not seeing that typical antagonistic mother, son against each other.
Yeah.
It's more him judging her, her lashing at him for judging her, and then her supporting him, even saying, I think we're in a good spot. We're going to change our lives.
Yeah.
You know, and I really like the fact that we're not seeing this antagonism. Of yeah. mother and son.
Yeah, it is. And don't get me wrong, it's good. I feel like it's probably about 10 minutes too long, give or take. Like,
I think if we cut the sex scene out, between.
Not even out. Like, just cut it down and then cut back on some of the, like, parking lot freestyle. And I get it, right? So, like, he chokes at the beginning. We need to see that he's competent. But there's plenty of that stuff. Like, we can lose some of it.
But I think that we also want to see him improve against additional competition.
That's fair. Then that's absolutely fair. I feel like there's just a lot of time spent on that stuff.
I think that if... it's hard to decide what to cut out, though, because maybe some of the hijinks that him and his friends get on with.
Yeah, I just get a little bogged down in it some. I think either they need to dial up the socio-political stuff or they need to eliminate it completely.
I think that's a good idea. I think maybe if they talk a little bit more about the socio-political stuff and make it a part
of... Well, and even the stuff about like the Elvis, the Eminem being a white rapper, like even that stuff is as present as it is. It's still kind of breezed over. Like, they don't really get in the weeds with that. I think that could have been really interesting.
You're right. I think you're right. But I think, though, what this film does right is that even though it goes a couple of minutes too long, as you said, and I mean, I can agree to disagree. Instead of 10 minutes, I can even say 5 minutes.
Yeah, like, let Jordan Peele write this script.
But you know what I mean? Right, but I think that the finished product that we got is probably the best of this story, and a lot of it still kind of works. The bogged down feeling.
Yeah, I don't have any.
It's
like,
not a long lasting feeling. It's not like that Judd Apatow piece of crap that we did.
For sure, it is. All I'm saying is, it is as good as it is, and it is great. It is just imperfect, right?
Right, but I think the imperfections are what make it as dynamite as it is.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, there's a nice texture to it. I enjoyed watching it.
And I think that Eminem does an amazing job at allowing his co-stars to help propel him. Because once again, he knows he's not an actor.
Yeah. And I would also say that watching this movie in 2002 was probably very different from watching it in 2022, right?
It really is, because the world was different then.
Yeah, absolutely. And
the world
so I think
was a
like
much better from place.
In 2002... I would have probably had a much different reaction to it, you know?
Right. I think that if our climate of life was like that we have it now, it wouldn't be able to happen in 2002, I think, for the reason that Eminem's powers in a film like this just goes to show how powerful he was.
Actually, let Spike Lee make this movie.
Yeah. I think having a director of Spike Lee's caliber, or even Ava DuVernay,
mm-hmm.
would do an amazing job at directing. If you're gonna do a movie like this again, get one of those two.
Yeah, because it just kind of like breezes over. I think what would make it the more interesting version of itself, and it sides a little bit too much on the like underdog, like almost the sports tropes, right?
Right. Well, you've also got a white writer and a white director who are trying to tell this inner city story.
And that I think is problematic.
And that's a problem. You know, I'm pretty sure that if we had a black writer,
it just didn't have the teeth that I wanted it to have, you know?
Right. It sort of, it eliminates the street, and it more focuses on letting Eminem.
It's a fairy tale, right? Like it's
right. Even though it does tell M's story,
mm-hmm.
it fairy tales a lot of it.
Right. So let's get a Bartender Smiley in here, and we'll start wrapping this thing up.
Sounds like a plan, Stan.
The Plotaholics rating system for the movies is a pretty simple system. Basically, they rate movies based on how many shots it takes to get through them. So if you got a good movie and you get through it all the way sober, then it takes 0 shots to get through the movie. And then if you got a really bad movie, then it could take up to 5 shots to get through the whole thing. I think you can try to figure out the middle part yourself. So what can I get you?
It's good.
It is good.
It is imperfect, as we said, mm-hmm. but it is good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for me, I am going to give 8 Mile a 1-shot rating. It is, I wish I had more teeth. I understand why it doesn't. Because I think that the story is wildly compelling, but I think that it misses on some of the more compelling aspects of it. Right.
Yeah, I can understand that. I'm only going to disagree with you on this because the only reason why I'm going to disagree, and I'm going to offer another perspective before I give my rating, is that a lot of the things that you want this story to sort of touch on,
mm-hmm.
the reason why the characters aren't touching on it as much is because this is their life.
I understand that.
So they're not going to touch on it like maybe
I'm not asking them to sit around and talk about it, right? Like, but I need to see it because the film should be interested in telling those stories.
I think it's more, it's a showing, not telling. Like you're seeing these things in the landscape of what this area looks like. A dilapidated neighborhood area, dilapidated urban area with a failing industry that is just barely keeping people fed.
Yeah.
And people doing everything they can and honestly ready to kill each other as a means to get away.
Yeah.
So I think the film is showing it to us.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, that's just my thought. I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think that the film is showing us that. And I think that you and I can see it. Maybe lesser people, some people
lesser
probably
people.
Not lesser people. Wow. That can come off very, very.
They're not even vomit.
Only I can be vomit.
Only I am vomit. There's the new t-shirt.
I am vomicus.
We should print sweaters that just have the word vomit on them.
That would be great. That would be great. That's some new swag right there.
Right.
But I think that some people may not be able to see it because there are a lot of people that when you have film, unless it is in your face, folks won't see it. So I do understand your point, but I think that the film is kind of showing.
I think what I need is more and maybe just a single conversation. They almost get there. There's one scene where they almost do it. Right. And it's the scene where his mom is like super disillusioned and she's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm working on my demo. And she's like, right. Like she just kind of like laughs it off. Yeah, I'm like, that's the moment. Right. Okay, because here you have these two warring perspectives. You have Brabbit, who sees the demo as his way out, who really believes in his art, who really thinks that's the way. Right. And then you have his mother, who's lived this life her entire life, who has never found a way out, who thinks that there is no way out, that this is a perpetual sentence. Right.
Yeah.
And she writes him off. And I think a few more lines of dialogue in that moment where they sort of like went at that particular like dream ideology versus rooted ideology, we could have gotten somewhere in that. Right. She's like, I've been dreaming my whole life and it hasn't got me anywhere. You know?
Yeah. Like what if mom said, he was like, did you know that I used to sing? I was a singer.
Right.
And this
because happened. What I need this movie to acknowledge is that what happens for him is an anomaly. Like he's able to overcome it. But in this movie, he's able to get out. Probably.
Does he though?
Alex is, well, we don't know, right? But that's the implication, right? Is that his life is because now if only he could like perform, right, then he'll be okay. And now he can. Alex is able to get out. We don't know how successful she is, but she's on her way out, right?
Right. Alex went on to voice a character in a show called Queen of the Mountain.
Right. Yeah, exactly. but you know what I mean? Like there's like for all the struggle, everybody kind of ends up okay.
Everyone has a chance, except Wink, because Wink gets his ass beat and then gets made fun of as well.
Yeah.
And he's just nowhere near as talented
and
as
he's
everyone.
Obviously the only one that I really want to shit on, you know?
Yeah, like I would love to run up to Wink and hit him in the kneecap with a baseball bat.
Yeah, I don't mind even if Papa Doc finds some success, as long as he can find a way to be honest with people.
Right. Like, honestly, I would like to smear peanut butter all over a baseball bat and hit Wink in his kneecap as hard as I can.
Nice.
And if he has a nut allergy, all the better.
Nice. but yeah, that's it. Like, that's and it's such a minor complaint, because ultimately I think it is very good.
Yeah. So as far as me, I'm giving this film a zero shot rating because I love the grittiness that is this 8 Mile area. I love the fact that this place is its own character. I love the fact that we're seeing everyday people just doing their best to make it in a country that, in a lot of ways, is don't give a shit about
them. This country definitely does not give very much of a shit about those people.
I mean, and I'm going to go on a small little rant here, if I may.
Certainly.
COVID-19 has proven just how screwed this country is. Oh, well, we have no real raw materials and nothing that's done here, so we're short on everything. You know, if COVID would have happened 40, 50, 60 years ago, we probably could have still kept going because things were made here.
Yeah.
Raw materials were here that we were able to make use of. But we're not doing it. We outsource everything to overseas to save a buck. And now look at where we're at. And 8 Mile is a key aspect of that. The auto industry really, really helped build not just Detroit, but the Midwest, which in turn helped New York and LA become New York and LA.
The smoggiest places on the planet.
Right. Now New York and LA are still, they're doing their things. Like New York and LA, New York City and Los Angeles could literally secede from the Union
and be
their own self-sustaining countries.
Yeah.
Detroit is hanging on by the skin of its teeth.
Yeah.
And it goes to show how badass Detroit and her people are.
Oh, for sure.
And this film shows how people in this, I mean, God, I hate to even call it a third world country, but I mean, look at it for what it's become. And they're still hanging tough. Yo, no city in the United States can really brag that. Pittsburgh can, at one point, could have, but Pittsburgh pulled itself away and went more into tech and blah, blah, blah after the steel industry went down and was able to start thriving. Detroit is still doing its best.
Yeah.
Shout out to the folks at Detroit.
And that's why the Pittsburgh Steelers are rebranding as the Pittsburgh Computers.
The Pittsburgh Microchips.
Right. The Pittsburgh Computer Machines.
Pittsburgh Ubers.
The Pittsburgh Ubers, sponsored by Lyft. This weekend at Lyft Stadium, it's the Pittsburgh Ubers.
Yeah, but you still have to have like a little ketchup bottle on the sleeve.
Right. Digital ketchup bottle.
Yeah, exactly. But I really think that this is a film that I think stands up to this day. Do we know if this film has even been entered into the Criteria collection?
You know, I don't know. I feel like it should have been, and I feel like it is. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't believe it is.
It should be. I think it will be.
It absolutely should be. But, I mean, we'll see. It is.
They'll get around to it.
I agree. This is one of those films that should be. Nope, it is not. It is not a part of the Criterion Collection from what I can see. And I went to Criterion.com. I searched it, and it's not coming up.
Yeah. That is going to do
That's
it for
that.
8 Mile. Next week, Mr. Tan will be doing Rockstar.
I cannot wait to do. I cannot wait for this because this movie here is what really made me appreciate Mark Wahlberg as an actor.
Okay.
And the fact that it does take place partly in Pittsburgh,
which
is awesome.
Yeah.
And
are there any computers in it?
No, it takes place in the 80s, so there are no computers.
There
is a copy machine though.
Oh, good. I do like a copy machine scene.
Hey, man, a good copy machine scene will make or break a film.
That's true. Put that on my fucking tombstone, you know what I mean?
Of course, I love the fact, are you wearing makeup? I'm in a band. Like, I'm going to go back to my office for one day and just wear makeup. And if someone questions me if I'm wearing makeup, I'm just going to go, I'm in a band.
There you go. Love it.
And leave it at
that. Yep. And and then we've still got we got another month on the Summer of Song. So
this was a great idea by you.
Yeah.
to have the, you know, the, you know, to really start going into a film genre that also, it, I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad it's there. It definitely gets the respect that it deserves. You know, you've got some good stuff in it. You got some bad stuff in it. But at the end of the day, it's amazing.
Absolutely. Well, that is going to do it for us this week. Please rate, review, subscribe, send us an email. You can insult us if you want. Send us a freaking, you know, I was going to say a slam poem, but a free verse, a freestyle rap battle submission where you attack the host of the Plotaholics. Why not?
And we may or may not rap battle back at you.
That's right. We will do delayed rap battles. And definitely not freestyle. So
because you get the right verse. Because my flows are deeper than the Grand Canyon.
My lyrics are bottomless. But that'll be it for this week, Mr. Tan. Anthony Tanopoulos.
My flows are still going pretty deep.
Yeah, they super deep.
They do be deep.
They do be deep. but yeah, we will see you guys again next time.
Take care, guys. See you next week.
Take a trip with us to Nilbog. Just promise not to drink the goo.
Oh my god.
If you get sucked into the Matrix.
Matrix.
We will send a phone for you.
Do you believe in fate?
But every movie has a plot hole. And every hole gets filled somehow. Whiskey, wine, or blue milk. Just don't cut me off right now. We're the Plotaholics. A breakfast club of two. We're the Plotaholics. Ripping plots apart for you.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.